Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello. It's true. We are joined at the hip. If only we had a third being to assimilate.
That would be Justin Robert Young.
Well, hello, friends.
Welcome to the collective. Your blood will mix with ours. We are all one being.
Right now, Justin looks like Ron Burgundy's half-brother, who's, you know, the hippest guy in Seattle.
Dude, just wait. Just wait. I got my wardrobe for our Kickstarter video for Action News that we're shooting on Saturday, which is why I have the mustache. Yeah. It's going to get more burgundy. It only gets more burgundy from here.
Oh, that's great.
This is the guy I think got fired from Des Moines because he was doing rails off of the anchor desk.
Here, wait, hold on. I'm going to send you both a picture of the outfit just so you can comment on it here.
All right.
All right.
Thank you for filling.
Hey man, I said the words all right.
We could just edit this out.
All right. Oh. I got a thing. Oh yeah.
Oh damn. All right. Yeah, you guys are in for a real
treat.
This
is the guy that got fired when they sent him to the local cheerleading competition to do coverage.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty great.
A few compliments of the winning team gone awry, some glances that weren't broken, like...
And an interview, asked to interview one of the girls in the newsman. It's just, you know...
Yeah. No, I think it's going to be super fun. Really looking forward to shooting it on Saturday.
Nice. Gentlemen, look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. Oh, wait. No, it's a big-ass plane.
It's not the 11th landing stuck by Titans of Space Travel SpaceX, is it?
Nope. Huh. But is it, that's cool, too.
Is it the B-2 bombers that were involved in the Scientology origin?
I think they were DC-9s.
Yeah, I thought they were DC-10s.
Hey, the DC-9s? Yeah, whatever.
Or DC-10s, yeah, sorry. No, and I just clicked something on my screen and everything went full screen here, which is not what I want. So what I'm talking about is, and yes, by the way, side note is that, yeah, SpaceX, you know, like had another rocket launch, had another landing, but this time they reused a Dragon capsule, which was a first.
Yeah, I didn't know that was like, was there a technological breakthrough that made that possible, or is that just something we could have been doing for a long time?
I mean, considering these things land in the ocean, they have to have a lot of refurbishment done on them.
Right.
And I guess like the first time, like they landed a Dragon, you know, like the batteries, you know, the salt water, all that stuff. So they have to do refurb on that. And that's what they're working for their generation two, the Dragon two, is to make that easier. But yeah, that's nobody else. I mean, short of the upper stage being reusable, you know, the shuttle, and then you have the X-34, and then, you know, the Buran sort of, you know, space plane, which never quite achieved orbit the Russians made, but that's the challenge. The Buran actually had like less loss of tiles, I think, than the shuttle, but of course, I don't think it reached, never carried people into orbit. So anyhow, I digress, and I never carried a payload, so that could be a factor. But anyhow, side note to that, point is, yes, very cool. Dragon got redone, another SpaceX launch. They seem to be back to a good cadence here, which is great, but that's not what I'm here to talk about. I'm here to talk about Paul Allen, Microsoft gazillionaire, and largely he's a guy that he's one of the reasons why we're here streaming right now, because I think that Paul Allen funded Tech TV, which helped Leo Laporte build an even bigger audience, which then helped him create Twit, which then certainly was a launching pad for you guys and doing live streaming, which then helped Weird Things, etc. So, you know, thanks, Paul. Paul Allen has unveiled, they showed it, they rolled it out of the hangar for the first time, the largest airplane in the world. This thing is massive.
Wait, bigger than the Spruce Goose?
Did I stutter? Did I? Was there a hiccup here, Brian? Was the Skype all jumbly?
If it was, I would blame Paul Allen.
Airplane in the world.
How
ever?
Wait. All right. I mean, I guess there's always going to be a reason to have it, right? But like, how big are we talking here?
We're talking really, really, really big. Bigger than the spruce goose. But you're like, wait. But before we show up any photos, and like, so why would you have the biggest airplane in the world?
If you to literally just to show it off.
And no. Here's what I think. When you get to a certain size, in the short term, you're going to have some kind of regular fuel. But long term, you could get closer and closer to this idea of like, I don't know, solar cells running it or something like. I assume meant to be a permanent air installation that is providing internet or something?
No. And actually, thanks chat room for spoiling it, by the way. Good job, guys. when I quiz them on this, don't give them the answers. Because this is where we might come up with some brilliant, yes, the link says what it is.
Oh, yeah.
it's just a link. Yeah, it's a very descriptive link. Point is that, you know, because we could have had brilliance here, guys. They could have come up with some new solution that we didn't even think about. I mean, it's Justin and Brian. I know that.
It's probably safe to tap out. We just would have got confused with me sending another photo.
I mean, basically, I mean, let's face facts. I was pretty much describing the shield helicarrier. You know, I just assume that's got to happen.
And Brian, I want to hear more of your theories on this because I'm into this. I will support this endeavor.
Your idea, Brian, was that, like, let's just have a space station in our atmosphere.
Well, so let's think about this, right? Like, there's a couple of different ways to do it. You could inflate it with gas, but you're going to lose that gas over time, and your Zeppelin's going to, you know, eventually get hurt. But it's like if
what are we, a steampunk villain? Like, come on.
But I know that I want to say like half a decade ago there was some story of the first glider or first solar powered plane that was able to travel all the way around the Earth. And it seems like as materials get better and, you know, evil geniuses get billion a year, then it seems like you could build essentially, you know, let's say something, what the Spruce Goose was supposed to be a football field wide. Let's say it's like literally the size of two football fields and it's made of a structure just covered in cells to where you could take like a 3-2 bedroom house and just keep it perpetually because there are certain tiers areas of the atmosphere that are fairly consistently weather trouble free. And as long as you avoid any storms, which would be easy enough in an artificial intelligence age, you could just live in the air for forever.
So yes, and that would be cool. You know, in the meantime, we've talked. I think we mentioned before. Larry Page is building his humongous airship, which we can talk about that next if we haven't. But so this Paul Allen airship is part of his ambitious effort, and he's teaming with. I think he's also an investor in Virgin Galactic. He wants to use it to launch rockets. He wants to use this thing to take rockets to a higher altitude and then launch them, so that you can save fuel costs from your first stage. Still need a first stage, but it's a much, much higher capacity.
Can I tell you, this is an idea that I had at the age of 8 years old. I saw a picture of the space shuttle on the back of a...
And you became a magician, Brian, 747. Instead of a tech pioneer.
But here's my point, is it's one of those things that's so intuitively obvious. You think like, well, why not just blast the rocket off from closer to space or whatever?
Well, we have been doing that since the 50s, but that's okay. Yes, true. Yes,
but that's my point, is that it's obviously a good idea. It's just so – it's inside of me is an 8-year-old Brian who's very happy that his intuition was correct and that it's a good idea.
So congrats to 8-year-old Brian.
Congratulations, everybody. Everybody at Schwood Online. on Twitter, rather, just go ahead and just add to it. Say congratulations to 8-year-old Brian.
I'm just trying to portray general enthusiasm for this idea.
We'll give you credit. You don't got to ask for it. We're giving you credit. Brian thought of this at 8 years old.
No.
And we won't bring up that if he'd bothered to go get an encyclopedia, he would have understood this was a thing that was done. But that's fine. That's fine. This is totally, totally fine. So, yes, there is. Yes. And there is an alternate version where Brian was like going to the magic shop, but he went over and like computer store.
Maybe I should become a scientist.
And Brian is, you know, meanwhile, Justin, Brett, and I are talking about billionaire Brian Brushwood unveiled his rocket launch plane today. And then I'm like, you know, when I was a kid, I was thinking about that too, you know. more Brushwood news. The Brushwood electric car.
Did you see there was some protest? I think they were protesting the Trump decision about the pulling out of the Paris Accord or whatever it is. But somebody just had a sign that said, Elon, save us. Yeah. I thought that was great that he's reached that level of public, notoriety.
He and George R. R. Martin should start a club of like unreasonable expectations, you know, that we have to deal with. So the plan with this is that this was interesting. We talked about this actually a couple years ago when Paul Allen first unveiled the project to build this big, huge plane to be able to launch rockets from. So just like as 8-year-old Brian would explain, the advantage is the higher altitude you have to – so much of your fuel is used to get past like your first 50,000 feet, 30,000, 40,000 feet is to get past there. And up until the reusability of the boosters, it seemed like the only way that it was really going to work – to get any sort of reusability or to increase your efficiency was by some vehicle to take you to a higher altitude. And planes that would launch rockets and stuff was, you know, a thing that had been thought of. Elon Musk is like, well, it introduces inefficiency because you have your plane at some other location. Elon Musk thinks about it literally from the point of view, well, my plane's at this other location, my rocket's over at this location, and I'm still going to need another stage. And so his engineering decision came to the first stage reusable, which people thought was impossible. And it turns out that it may not be impossible to reland a first stage. Newsflash. But yeah. Paul Allen wants to take this approach. And this would allow for even if you could – the advantage of this plane is you could use that with, you know, a rocket and actually have a get even more altitude, carry even more payload up there because it's almost acting like another stage to it and another reusable stage to it. But when they first announced this project a couple years ago – was very curious because in the press announcement, it said that Paul Allen was developing this and had a partnership with
Elon Musk.
Yeah, SpaceX. Initially, they said they were going to be trying to use it to launch Falcon 9s.
Wow.
And then I think that Elon realized that sort of evaporated when Falcon 9 first stage reusability became more and more viable. And also, one of the things that's happened to the Falcon 9 is it's almost twice as powerful as when it first started. They've increased so much more power out of the system. So,
okay, before we move too far off of the subject of getting out of the gravity well, did either of you guys read Seven Eves, the new Neal Stephenson book?
No.
There's this is not a plot element, but at some point he tells the story of long down the road, we'll say, you know, thousands of years in the future. Somebody who gets to orbit, and they get to orbit completely under their own power. Basically, you got a wingsuit of varieties that you can, you know, essentially paraglide and ride thermals up, 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 up. And then going around planet Earth was a series of Bolo satellites. Bolo is, you know, picture two. Basically coconuts tied together with some twine. He's swinging around, and as it flies, the forces, two vessels are trying to fly away from each other, but they're tethered. So as a result, you get this end-over-end thing. So the idea is these Bolo satellites are constantly orbiting Earth, and as they do, they roll forward so that one of the pieces dips down low enough into the atmosphere and stays there for, we'll say, 90 seconds, while the other half rolls forward on it. And then at that point, it rolls forward and the other half dips into the atmosphere, and the other one just suddenly is doing this 3G whip around like you would imagine with a bolo. So picture kind of a slinky walking around the Earth are these bolos. And so in part of the book, you watch somebody leave from the surface of the Earth, use a nominal boost to get up in the air, ride the thermals up high enough that they're able to, you know, they're looking at the computer. They said, okay, the bolo is going to be by in so long amount of time. And then you see it coming. And then the one piece lands right in front. You know, she swoops in on the wing set and then immediately braces herself, knowing that she's about to hit 3 6 Gs or whatever as the thing swings around. But then during one of those times of swinging around, now you're kind of up in space and you use a different type of vessel to rendezvous with and get out there.
Go ahead. That is pure insanity. That's ridiculous. And I hope we live in a time and age when we can see people try that.
Right. I mean, that's just it is,
I don't think it'll work, but I want them to try it.
Well, and plus also like there's a set of rules in the book that give a reason why that might be a viable thing. There's a very hands-off Earth mentality. So everyone's getting in as close as they can, without actually touching. I don't know, but I love thinking of these wild out of the box alternative theories to bust out of the gravity well, and what I hear from this Paul Allen project reminds me of that insane thinking that I love so much in Seven Eves.
Absolutely. And so question somebody says, won't Newton's third law say that whatever forces the rocket pushes up will push the plane down? How's that conserving fuel? It's conserving the rocket's fuel. Remember, the purpose of a first stage and getting rid of your first stage is that first stage pushes the rest of the mass up. And then when you're done with that first stage, you jettison, you abandon it. In this case, your first stage is this airplane. And so the airplane is taking your rocket is still fully fueled. Your rocket's intact. So you get to 30,000, 40,000 feet with this airplane, you know, let's say 50,000 feet if it's got a great ceiling to it. You've got 50,000 feet up and then your rocket takes off. So if you took a Falcon 9 as it is on the launch pad right now and then took it to 50,000 feet and let it launch, you've got a heck of a lot more payload you can put to orbit or further out beyond.
I mean, so if it was a big platform that was just always up there and you just flew all the pieces up, you assembled the rocket and you fired from there. I love this idea of essentially, what was the city from Bioshock Infinite?
Columbia?
Yeah, was it? I think it was Columbia.
I believe so.
So there's the dark sky platforms. Is a very interesting topic, which we've talked about a little before, and that's actually my third book in my Station Breaker series starts off on one of those, which is the idea at 100,000 feet up, building these using kilometer-long pylons filled with hydrogen gas supporting a thing in the middle of it. And that the idea that you'd have to have a balloon that basically you have to launch from a higher altitude because it would be so, so thin. But yeah, Stratostations, Dark Sky, those things are – yes, let's try that. 140,000 feet is what this guy talks about.
Seems like on all of planet Earth, there probably is up in the stratosphere the most reliably consistent environment on the entire planet in terms of, you know, being essentially the same temperature, essentially the same weather conditions, essentially, you know, you're above all of it. And it's like all you got to do is get enough balloons and enough real estate. You could build what? In fact, let's think crazy talk. Why couldn't you build a Manhattan-sized installation that just floated up there?
Yes, and remember, at that altitude, your atmosphere is like 2 or 3%.
Sure, you'll have to have a bubble and pressurize to breathe.
So, and the answer is we should be. And I think I'm excited by the fact that Larry Page has put, you know, is building his big, huge high altitude. We need just to start. There was some sort of interest in doing this and developing, let's say, like, you know, they called stratosats, which are just high altitude balloons that sort of function like satellites over specific areas. So we think that I write about this stuff because I think that this seems to me like an area. Yeah, we should be doing this. Because it would be cool. Like, I love the idea of if you started building, because, yeah, you look at this, you're like, man, that's a couple kilometers across, just float a little bit of material. But it's like, you start thinking the terms, when you have a practical reason to do this and you start thinking terms of scale, what that means, you know.
Dude, I'll tell you what, man, picture, okay, let's say big enough for one container ship. Shipping container type thing, right? So that much space. You could run a little office out of there. You could have an outpost or whatever.
And Brian typing away. I really wanted to get away from everything.
yeah, right? But it's like once you have the proof of concept.
Daddy, how the hell?
Like once you have a proof of concept and you're able to say $3 million stays up forever. And it's like, how do you get there? Well, you take a quadcopter. You know, this drone chip will take you up and drop you off, and you can come and go all you want, and it'll just be up there forever. Like the moment that real estate market opens, all of a sudden the super like there, there's more room to build up there than exists on all of the land of the planet Earth. Like, think about what a land rush that could be if we just built all these floating platforms that are able to kind of maneuver like barges. You kind of get close to each other and you see each other. But at that point, I, you know, you're running hydroponics to grow your own food and stuff. You get regular deliveries sent up to you and stuff. That's Amazon paradise, right? Is to just live up in the clouds.
You say that is that Amazon actually has patents or done some stuff on the idea of floating warehouse fulfillment centers. So the idea that instead of, you know, you just have your warehouse fulfillment center just sort of drift to where you need it to be, and then you refill it from there. So Waffleophagus brings up in the chat room Project Loon. So Project Loon was the Google project to use high altitude balloons to try to transfer, you know, internet. And what was curious about that was when they first started that, it was, you know, the leading expert on balloons, I think it was Ballard, is that who it was? I may be confusing him. But anyhow, the guy that Richard Branson went to was very dismissive. There's a Wired article, and we talked about this on a prior podcast, where he says, like, oh, well, you know, they want to try to get this thing to stay up there for weeks. They're not going to do it. You just can't do it. The record at some time was like, you know, like 30 days, and that was sort of an exception to it. And now, you know, Google's been able to put these things up for months at a time. Now, I don't know how funded the project is right now, where the current status of it is, but it certainly showed that, well, some smart people, if you get enough people trying to solve these problems, and they came up with a lot of solutions for, like, how do we prevent putting micro tears in the materials? How do we do this? How do we do that? And yeah, I think that once you find those applications for it, and there's certainly some military ones, but if we start finding other applications for it, I think, yeah, I'm excited, because I think I love that idea of the future of where, you know, we're putting higher up stations in there and things that can slowly drift around the world, where you could just say, hey, you know, let's go into this floating city and take that over to some other country and do the leisurely travel, or let's build facilities and stuff.
Beef Viper in the chat says in the near term, he sees people living in their self-driving vans.
Dude. Auto self-driving RV, fully on board, fully
right.
on board.
Well, and think about it, like, all of a sudden homelessness will be the new chic, right? Like if you've got a comfortable place to stay, then essentially the idea of having an address, like, you've got an email address, that's all you need, right?
Yeah, I think that you think about the concept of the RV park and that becoming a hip sort of thing. You know, you think about the idea of, like, oh, really what you just want is, you know, one RV size spot in a really cool area, or a timeshare or something. Like, I mean, there's an existing market economy for that right now, but we sort of don't, you look at it, you have to be a retiree or a redneck or something. I say that as a retiree redneck. We talked about in previous ones about once you start thinking about self-driving and autonomy, how that just, it's not just we get into a car and go to the same place like we do now. It's, hey, you know, we can have a thing pull up in front of our house that's a tiki bar when we have a party. We can have deliveries and all sorts of other stuff. And then, yeah, the idea that, oh, we want to go do, you know, Weird Attack Fest, you know, like, oh, well, we just got this plot of land in Texas and we're just going to have, if you want to show up, just, you know, order a Tesla RV
so
and join us.
How far off do you think are we? I think we talked about this idea on Weird Things years ago, but I was thinking about, like, what would Uber for hotel rooms look like? Basically, you would online design your room. I want this lighting. I like these amenities. I like this set out, this, that, and the other. And then the closet is, imagine just a storage pod space, right? So it's like, let's say underground, you got a parking garage amount of just pods of closets. And when you need to crash in a room, you say, give me a room. You don't care which room it is. Just say, give me a room, set it up like I like it. And then, and all they have to do is, let's say, you know, through some kind of hydraulic system, they move the closet up to fit into the closet of the room. So that's actually your actual stuff that you leave in there locked up and safe. But you walk in, each time you stay there, it's a different room, but it never feels like a different room because everything's laid out the same every single time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that, and that's, you know, I spent like a week once with a notebook trying to come up with the idea of the infinite closet, which was thinking of all the crap and stuff that I had and the idea of what if you just had this, like you sort of store things on a cloud. What if you just had this device you just sort of threw things into and then longer term storage, it would like store somewhere else
or figure out how to pack. An infinite closet where you can store all your secrets. All
of the secrets. But yeah, I think, and to your point, I think, cause I think that there is something neat about like, you know, you look at like how people used to travel 100 years ago when only wealthy people traveled and you look at like the luggage they had, like you pull up the thing with the shaving kit inside of the case and the drawers, your luggage was actually furniture to some extent, you know? And, you know, because you'd be going, sometimes your accommodations would just literally be a room or whatever. And I think that there is something neat about the idea of having whatever you need, wherever you want it to be. But also, you know, when you reduce the cost of stuff too, like, you know, the Amazon Prime promise, it's like, oh yeah, you buy the sweater and we'll also have the sweater anywhere else you may need it.
Right, right. You essentially buy a license to a particular style that you like to wear or whatever. And it's like the clothes are always different. Like, for example, like why actually wash your actual clothes? Why not throw your clothes in a bin and there's the same clothes of the same fashion choice that you like? And if something's slightly off, well, don't worry about it. The next time you get it, it won't be off. You know,
well, but like, think about if we start moving more towards into precision 3D manufacturing and all these other stuff, like, yeah, it is like you buy that shirt subscription or that shirt license kind of thing. And people are like, oh, it sounds wasteful. Like, actually, the other side of this is it becomes very easy to reuse materials. It becomes very, very easy to reuse stuff, and you can increase efficiencies there. And or maybe it doesn't, but you can reduce the amount of impact that you have on transporting stuff. That's one of the biggest costs that goes into anything. One of the most economic costs, environmental costs, is what it takes to ship something from. You know, the biggest cost of Chinese manufacturing is the fact you got to get from China to here. And when you were able to have these sort of, you know, if your hotel says, oh yeah, no, we've got a full on 3D manufacturing sort of thing, so you just send us whatever clothes you want, it'll be in your drawer.
So that makes me think of, like, in the closet, I've got an old Foot Locker that dates back to college and high school, and it's got a bunch of memorabilia. I actually don't even know what's in there because it's like a present that I'm wrapping for myself.
Bunch of wee.
I'm going to go and, you know, read all those old love letters and look at my old stuff. And like, that is something at some point I'll feel nostalgic enough to open. But also, there's no need for me to physically have all this. If somebody was to say, hey, include it in your life subscription, whatever, we're going to just digitize all of this. And you'll be able to see every page will be digitized. You'll be able to experience it all in virtual reality, but you won't physically have the thing. But the smell will be recorded and it'll be able to, you know, remanufacture that smell. You'll have the complete nostalgic experience down the road when you want to see this again. And in the meantime, all of this will be turned into usable goods in the short term. I think I would go for that deal.
You know, two pods sitting in a warehouse in Miami right now filled with a bunch of stuff. And if you're like, a lot of it's notebooks and stuff. And if you said, you know what, you know, for $500, we will go scan every single notebook, everything else like this. And you just tell us what you want to keep and what you don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd go for it. Sorry, I couldn't hear you, Justin. What was that?
I think the biggest thing is, would you rather be able to interact with it at all times in VR or whenever you want to see it, you can get it sent back to you as remanufactured, right? So like nobody's really keeping anything, but all of a sudden you just get, Andrew can get his notebook as fully recreated a facsimile of it. So you can have it and throw it away, right? Like, because it's not really the notebook. The idea is you can always get back as recreated. Now, searchability, I think, is a bigger thing, where especially if you're a diligent note taker or you want to say, you know, take the time to say, okay, well, this was about that, and now all of a sudden have this digital searchable index of physical things that you've had before. I think that's probably more, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm in a box in terms of what virtual reality will be going forward. But to me, I think those are the two killer items is, can I search everything that I just wrote down throughout all of my life, right? Or it was written to me throughout all of my life. Can I have a museum quality record of me? And if I really want to share something with somebody, can I just hit a button and out of cold storage comes maybe better than it used to be, free from the aging process, maybe aged exactly how you remember it, smelling exactly how you remember it, in a box that is recreated to look like the kind of stuff that you kept it in.
Oh, my God. And think of how trivial it would be to take little things like, hey, we noticed a bunch of scratch out. We've removed all those. Also, your handwriting back then wasn't that good.
Your girlfriend is ugly. We airbrushed her.
Right, right. Well, we've reformatted it with what we feel like is classic Brian handwriting, well executed. So it's just neater is all. Like, that would be amazing. That's
the thing is, you know, since we've done all this, you know, the podcast stuff, there's a lot of stuff that I've gotten at conventions from people that have like come up to me or just like I've collected in my travels that like I can't throw away. And yet it becomes this very voluminous part of my closet that continues to grow.
Like little stuff. Like I'm not going to throw away. I have 7 years of Dragon Con badges now. You know, it's like this is a special. Sure. I can't throw any of them away.
Well, it's like I was glad that we built a set because I could put like stuff like this. This is like a really cool little drawing of Brian and Captain Morgan. It's not finished, and it was told to me, hey, this isn't finished, but you know, I don't know what else I'm going to do with it. So here, go ahead and take it. This came at Dragon Con, and it's like I have no idea what I'm ever going to do with this unless I start a museum for me. Right.
Well, by the way, right,
my own museum.
You want to see your future? Take a look at my office. You've already seen like I am aware that it is an unusual and wonderful thing that I got to spend 15 years touring all over the United States doing my silly magic show, and there are times that I suffer from imposter syndrome, and I want very much to go into my place of work and see physical, tangible reminders of, no, man, you got this. You've done this. This is your life. You are this guy. Go out there and kick some ass. And so it's a shrine unto myself, which I would be embarrassed by if it wasn't so damned effective at getting me. We're sort of dipping into after things territory here. It was very much, you know.
Or also you can, if Brian's really feeling down on himself, he can walk into his living room and see the gigantic theme park size God shrine of his face that was meant to steer people to his Halloween Horror Night show.
No, that really does belong over the office. I really put that up in the wrong place. It doesn't belong in the living room.
Gentlemen, you know what does belong in the living room and in your ears and in your hearts, and that is the Weird Things podcast, and that's made possible by you. How? If you go to patreon.com/weirdthings, patreon.com/weirdthings, be a big help.
$125. $125. Less than the cost of getting a mole removed is what we need to enable the next part of our master plan.
Absolutely. We're going to edit together all of our Journey Quest segments that take place at the end of the show. I know I am excited to listen to the unbroken lunacy that is the Journey Quest segments put together, because I've lived them and I still can't imagine what they would all sound like together, one after another, after another, after another.
Frustrating is, I bet, the word that will come to your mind when that happens, but we won't know. Until...
No. I think it's going to be amazing. It reminds me of, back in, you know, a couple of years ago when I was more into music, and you'd have like two rappers going back and forth. Eventually somebody would edit together like the diss track mixtape, where it would just be them going back and forth. And in a slightly pre-digital age where it was harder for everything to be looked up immediately, it was
welcome
amazing.
Welcome to where Andrew goes, I don't think I'm cool enough to be Justin's friend.
It was always amazing, because like part of the waiting, the expectation was so much, and that's what it is for Journey Quest. It's super fun to kind of go a week, and then you remember where you were, and you keep going. All together, I think it'll be absolute insanity. I'm super pumped for when we get to this level.
Yeah, Ben, if you guys enjoy the Weird Things podcast, if we make your day just a little bit better, I want you to do a thought experiment. Imagine that we walked into the room right now. Would you buy us a coffee? If so...
I don't drink coffee, Brian.
Okay. Would you buy us a water? It's artisan water.
I've got a water, Brian.
Okay. Would you buy us... a beer? You don't. Damn. Okay, look. If we were there
chips
in person,
and salsa.
If you, yeah, that's right, chips and salsa. If we were there in person,
they're free at a lot of restaurants.
Please give us money. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
Walk. Hey, before we fire up the new segment here, have you guys, has anybody peeked at the WWDC thing?
What's the latest?
I've been watching.
Guesses on. Don't look. Guesses on the name of their Google Home, Amazon Echo.
Apple Place.
Place?
Apple Place, okay. Knows where you belong in your place, your Apple Place.
It's actually hilarious because you just kind of gave like the Soviet Union version of what it's called. Like in Soviet Russia, you have Place Pod.
Yes.
Here in America, you have Home Pod.
Exactly.
No, it's literally the Home
that's
Pod.
That's what it is. Home
it's
Pod.
Home Pod.
What?
They are like positioning it as a music speaker first, but it has Hey Siri support. It is $350 available in December in US, UK, Australia.
Based upon the hit success that Apple Hi-Fi was, all right. So
this is going to be huge.
I'm a bit of an Apple fanboy. Let me make that very, very clear. But I also have this, I love a lot of things they do. I love their commitment to privacy. I love the fact they stood up the FBI and the government about how their encryption works and would not develop workarounds and all this. And I respect that. It's one of the reasons I use Apple products is because I'm not the product. I'm the consumer. And they're very, very good. They take privacy more seriously than anybody else. Absolutely committed to that. I believe that. Yeah. That is their core value because their profit motive isn't selling us expensive stuff. I love my iPhone. I use my iPhone every day. I like my Apple TV. I use iMac in front of me. I got my iPad. I love so much of the stuff. Siri to me is a constantly frustrating thing. I love my Alexa. And I'll tell you one of the simplest things about Siri, and it reminds me, if I thought of my analogy to this, is if I want to use my Alexa, I just say, Alexa, what time is it, right? If you want to use Siri, what do you have to do?
You have to hold down a button and wait for her to interrupt you mid-sentence to say she doesn't understand what you're talking about.
You can turn on Hey Siri and have her just sitting there and go, but you got to go, Hey Siri, and then wait for bleepity bleep. Hey, could you do this? Blah, blah, blah. And that reminds me of how Steve Jobs used to make fun of Microsoft where they have to press start to close down the computer. It is several steps. It is below the fold. Yep. It is several steps. Hey Siri, blinkity blink. Could you do? And now she's turning on, I Alexa, you know, over she's a bit aggressive sometimes, but I can mute her very easy. That is one of the reasons I just don't use Siri. Is I'll have my I have my phone next to my Alexa, and I'll go, Hey Siri, blinkity. You just want to go, Hey Siri, you know, what time is it?
Yeah. I gotta tell you, I am astonished to realize like that the biggest thing keeping us from having the Majel Barrett Starship Enterprise always omnipresent, you just call out to it and it grants you wishes, has been a cultural barrier, has been the idea that we have been previously uncomfortable with the idea of always on microphones. And now I'm at the point where like I'm annoyed that my Sonos, I'm annoyed that my Sonos requires me to open up my phone or whatever. I just want to be able to bark at it.
Sonos has gotten white people rich before.
No, I have Hey Siri enabled on my phone, so if I go, Hey Siri, what time is it?
Okay, so real, just because I'm agreeing with you, Brian. I wasn't trying to make fun of you. I agree. Since I've had the Echo, it's become increasingly frustrating to make sure that I'm on the right Wi-Fi network, that I have Wi-Fi enabled, that I can, I'm then entering it in and I got to group things. I can't just tell it, turn on this speaker, turn off that speaker. I'll tell you what, I don't know if I'm in love with the name, but whatever. If what Apple is going to give us is a better Sonos that plugs into the Apple Music ecosystem, which I'm already a part of, I have more interest in that in dual capacity with my Echo than I have with both an Echo and a Google Home, for example.
Yeah, I would My frustration is more of an interface one. Like Siri's got amazing, the AI behind it is really good because there's things you run into, you realize Echo's, Amazon Alexa is very good at a couple things. And also, you know, they get Dot for $50 and the Dot's wonderful. $50, you have the same warning. I think it's amazing, but it doesn't have the same AI behind it, which I thought was very, very cool about Siri. My thing is the front end of Siri where I have to do that non-intuitive.
Yeah.
I would never talk to a human that way or wait for that. And I wish Apple would go like, oh, you know, maybe we could address that. And I think it'd be better. I would not want to put a Google Home in my house. I would never put one in my house because there, and I make that trade off with Alexa, but like they're a marketing company. And like when they had like the first like couple months the Google Home was out there, they ran. Oh, it wasn't an ad. It was just this, you know.
Oh, just letting you know that magic combines with suspense when Beauty and the Beast comes to theaters this Friday. You can get tickets by saying, get me tickets. This isn't an ad. Tale as old as time. This is just a song we're playing. It's not an ad.
Yeah, and they were that they denied that it was an ad. The one that happened, it too, they denied that it was an ad. And it's like, okay, it just disappeared out of nowhere. Like there isn't an entire team at Google trying to figure out how to push ads and do through this. Like,
come on, buddy. You knew that when you put that in there, you were getting paid by Disney.
Yeah. Fine for some people. That's fine. I'm like the whole the HomePod, by the way, which sounds like a personal grow room that you would have, you know.
Oh, dude, fool me five times, shame on, I'm out of the game. Like, how many times have they introduced the name of a thing that we thought was dumb and 20 minutes later it was the defining word for that thing?
I've never been too problematic with the names.
iPad was probably the biggest one.
Right. Yeah. Even iPod was a weird name at the first.
That
was also a different thing because like they launched that with such low expectations.
Right.
You know,
and look at it now, guys. Who buys an iPod now? You know what I'm saying? Right?
Yeah, that's true. iPod sales are down.
Failure. So I would say the thing that has me most excited, because I kind of, you look at like, okay, and I think that Apple getting to the Home Assistant thing is going to be great because Apple's going to do, it's Google, big fanboy for Apple for iOS, but Google doing Android, wonderful, great. It makes the competition increases is because they have to differentiate themselves and come up with their own features. And there's, you know, my iPhone is better because Apple and Google have been in this competition to make better products rather than one person sitting there and doing that. It's like, we're big SpaceX fans, but we're excited about Blue Origin. We're excited that Paul Allen is doing his thing. We want more. We're not like, you know, we only want one team. We want a game in which everything gets better. We watched, right before we did our show, we watched the demo of the AR kit, which... Yeah, so ARKit Apple has these different sort of software development kits, you know, that these interfaces you can use to add features and functionality to your applications for Apple. And so what ARKit is a software system for developing applications that does augmented reality. And what's really, really cool about ARKit and what's kind of thing that I think that kind of can get very easily lost when you look at this presentation is we've all seen the augmented reality stuff where you aim it at like, you know, a little sheet or the little cereal box icon or something at an icon. And then it, you know, you look at that and you're like, oh, cool, I'm making the little, you know, little creature appear or whatever. ARKit doesn't require you to have one of those objects, one of those materials in front of you in order to range and figure out what it does. You aim it at a table and it senses, it uses all sorts of other intelligent data to figure out what the size of your room is, what the shape of the objects it's looking at and all that. And then it can superimpose objects onto that space. So we watched demos of some really cool game stuff and it's like AR where you aim it at that little, you know, the little whatever that pre-configured symbol is, but you don't need that. You don't need that at all. One of the challenges of trying to do with, let's say, work with a Vive, an HTC Vive, is you've got to have the Lighthouse room sensors so it knows where you are. Apple is able to use its onboard cameras, its accelerometer, and everything else. Not unlike, you know, the project Google's been working on with their own room sensing stuff, you know, in building their own technology for doing this. Apple has now figured out how to do that with a stock iPhone and a stock iPad so that you can just aim this thing, it knows exactly where it is and its position in space, and you can move around objects and get different points of view. So I'm super excited about that because we know that Apple behind the scenes is also working on their own AR hardware, and this is the first step, is building these applications for it. And we saw a demo, not unlike, you know, when we watched the Microsoft HoloLens demo, where, you know, you saw, like, they looked at the table, you moved around the table, and you saw it. That was cool. But HoloLens was a year away from shipping, and the development stuff was even further out. But now you have stuff that's a software system that's shipping now that you can play with.
I think it looks fantastic. It'll be curious to see where people go with it, because I think the biggest limitation on AR with both the iPad and the iPhone is just battery consumption. You know, even people I knew that were super, super into the limited AR that was Pokemon Go almost immediately turned off the AR stuff just because it drained your battery so far. So mm-hmm. I think it's great that they're building these tools, and it's great that the processing power in these machines can handle it. I'm curious to see where things go.
Yeah, well, the one of the, you know, Apple fanboy here, one of the advantages of some of the stuff when Apple put stuff in there is they've always been very, very tried to be attentive to power consumption. And sure. And they're building, you know, and the next generation, we're going to get in the next generation chips, very either this next iPhone and the one after that, we're probably going to get more built-in onboard voice recognition, and we're probably going to get a visual CPU unit that's for AR. Specifically dedicated towards that, which will mean lower power consumption.
At this WWDC, did they make any announcements about the when and if of next iPhone? Because there's a bit of a rift in the rumor community whether they think it's going to be, you know, are they going to move the fingerprint scanner to the back, and is it going to be edge to edge wrap around with a cutout for the thing at the top, or is it going to be, you know, still have a bezel the way the other ones did?
So they didn't announce new hardware for iPhones because WWDC is usually like software update time, mm-hmm. Because it's a developer conference. It was more about what iOS 11 will look like, but nothing indicative of what new hardware would look like.
Hmm. Yeah, we'll see what happens with when they start plugging in the different, you know, people start looking around the new dev kits to see what's in there sometimes. And so it would surprise me if they did the fingerprint sensor on the back. It would really, really, really surprise me if they did that. But not to say that they wouldn't do something that would surprise
you. Have it be on like the front. So you would be touching the screen, but the fingerprint sensor would be behind the screen.
Yeah, supposedly leaked reports that were on Reddit were that they've been trying to test a fingerprint sensor that works through the screen, but it didn't have the same success rate, you know? And so, it's going to come down to Apple sells more units when it's a radically redesigned phone. When the phone looks very different, you know, that's when it moves. And now going full front screen design is the 10. You have Andy Rubin, who is originally the guy with Android and that got bought by Google and developed Android for them. He's got his new phone out, the Essential Phone, which mm-hmm. is, you know, an Android compliant phone that's got almost like the full on screen, you know, like there. So, you know, you're seeing other people do it. And so, because people, you know, it's one of these things in tech, it's not so much somebody copies somebody else, it's just sort of go, well, we think it's going to be thinner and the screens are going to be bigger.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, they're all watching the same component markets and what can be done and what can be done at scale and what can be done profitably, like, and what people like, you know. Yeah, it'll be curious.
So we're looking at photos that appear to be renderings of the new iPhone with a fingerprint sensor on the back. And Rene Gu says in the chat room, people using Androids with fingerprint on the back say it's more convenient as your finger is already there. Yeah, that's a point. You know, of course, hey, we got to buy new cases, and we know how Apple hates to make us have to buy new, you know, accessories.
Well, I mean, they've already made it clear that their courage knows no limits, and I'm looking forward to the courage of Bose to release a freaking lightning port.
Oh my God, wait a minute. I just realized a fingerprint sensor. I'm immediately against the fingerprint sensor on the back because I just realized the era of my wallet case will die.
Will be over.
It'll be over. Uh-oh, I'm against it. I ain't for it. I'm against it.
Well, here's what I bet they'll do. If they make that kind of move, they'll also have a facial recognition thing where it's like you just wave it in front of your face. And
well, and you could come up with a wallet case that you could flip it open and slide it in, or I'm sure they'll come up with it. They'll give us a solution. Then they'll convince themselves that it's a worthwhile solution.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a new... I don't want the book. I don't want my little black book phone. That's always looked so weird.
So Bryce just put up a photo of like a rendering. I mean, this is amazing. These renderings of what it looks like, of like what the new case would look like, where it's a flip open case where your credit card goes in the side. We don't know what to believe anymore. You know, you see something, you look super realistic, you know, like, you know, I'm excited about ARKit. I'm like, that's, and it's not because, oh, wow, it's now that Google's into the play, Apple's into this play, that is, it's very, very cool. The new Macs, by the way, support Steam VR. Saying, you know, yeah, but AR, I think it's going to be like watching them, you know, they show the demo, and granted, it's a demo, but you know, we've had this conversation before about, I'm a big believer that I think the future isn't so much as putting goggles and stuff on our heads, is that before we get to the Neuralace, it's going to be turning every screen in your house into a projection screen. And when you're using eye tracking, you can give that augmented reality sort of view by tracking where you're moving and where you're looking and create that, you know, sensation of things looking like they have 3D in depth to it. And excited.
Yeah. Well, the AR thing is curious for me because like I have yet to see the killer app that makes me want to think I want to experience via AR through holding up a window to an alternate reality all around us. I get the idea of you're wearing glasses anyway, so now all of the world has a video game interface. Like, I get that. But the idea, like, reach into your pocket, pull out your phone, a window to see a thing.
Yeah, no, I think that's intermediate and dumb. I agree. I totally agree that that's not as cool as having glasses. I agree. Pulling out the phone and doing it, and that's why it's had limited novelty. But they did show in their demo, they showed some really, really cool stuff they were doing with that same tech. They showed them pulling out, like, you know, you've seen, like, we've got pretty cool document scanners right now where you can aim it and you say these are the corners or whatever. They showed their new version of a document scanner where they aimed it at like a contract at an angle and it immediately popped it open and popped it up and created this thing that you could sign, you could do with checks and all that. So it's taking that, what we already have, which is cool tech for, like, you know, recognizing, you know, importing text into video or text into, you know, digitizing, you know, print things, actual physical objects, using that for the next level tech is kind of cool. But yeah, I know. I agree. I like holding up your phone and doing this. It's like, oh yeah, this is really cool.
Well, and keep in mind, like I know, I'm very aware that the limitation is my imagination, not the limitation of the hardware. You know, I'm looking forward to is somebody putting together a killer app idea where I'm just like, oh my, that's going to make everything better.
Yeah.
Oh wait, was that a real thing? Balloon Knots is saying that IKEA's AR app is visualizing furniture before you buy it.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's the house. There's a number of apps that do that now where they let you drop things put into place. And that's it is a, you know, it's like trying to get people excited about the HTTP protocol, you know, in 1981. You know, like, yeah, it sounds great. This is really, really exciting. And you know, what it comes down to is that it's hard to appreciate the difference between Flickr and Instagram if you're in 2005, you know, but IKEA.
What the hell is happening in that?
I don't know. That promotion.
IKEA promotional.
Swedish. They're just so weird. There's just people tickling each other, and like now there's more people, and there's children involved. And
okay.
Yeah. So I think that. I'll give you an example of what I think is going to be really, really cool. We're talking about augmented reality, not with the thing in front, but putting on the glasses, but being in a room and being able to see stuff is think of how big tabletop games are.
Yep.
Okay. Think about what that means when you can have your own AR tabletop game dev kit and you can say, hey, we're going to make this and we're going to play our D&D, whatever kind of session. It's like Holo Chess or whatever like this. And you design your own or whatever. It's going to become a really cool marketplace because you could use standard game engines.
Well, and here's the thing, like even I cannot think of a single board game that does not get enhanced by having a computer handle the bull crap for you. Like, like even Monopoly, like if you could just glance and know how much money everyone has and all the banking transactions happen immediately, like, yeah, everybody put on these goggles and we're just going to play Monopoly together. And we're going to do, because the first time I saw that was I love Settlers of Catan, but I will state unequivocally that the Xbox version of Catan is superior to the actual board game, because you have a limit of 90 seconds to take your turn. It handles all the mathy transactions. If you're not capable of making a trade, it doesn't allow you the opportunity to offer it, which of course in real life, you know, you might, you know, miscalculations happen and so on. It's great. And if I could just get that, we're still all staring at the table together and we're still all talking, but the computer was keeping everything moving along. That would be ideal.
Well, and even, you know, Brian and I, and I wouldn't be shocked if it's one of our picks at the end of this.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
But we were playing, you know, Star Trek Bridge Commander, and I had an absolute blast. I loved it. But, you know, I don't know exactly how much more I got that I couldn't get if just the gigantic screen was in front of, like, just in my room. And my console was right in front of me, and I could still hear everybody.
Yeah.
You know? Imagine sitting down at a tabletop with some friends and the goggles on, and you're watching the battle appear over the table.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and that's like, and we're getting, I'm saying that the augmented reality case instead of the virtual reality case, the augmented reality case is like, much like we get together, like we sit around in a room and we play these games, the kind of games and stuff we're going to play with when we're hanging out together. And it could be like, oh, let's play this cool, you know, sword and sorcery type tabletop game. It's like, okay, do you guys want to roll for your fight, or do you want to get up and do you actually want to use virtual weapons and fight?
Hmm. Yeah, no, I guess that's my point is that that could be a better AR game than it is a VR game. And yeah, and the gotcha. Fact that tech is there, I think, is amazing.
So yeah, so I think that in the game side, I certainly see we're gonna have a different kind of game. You're gonna have a thing where you could make tabletop game kits that you guys would be able to sit in and code and develop, you know, and put out a tabletop AR game with, you know, say, oh, this is the, because it's like, we're at a great place with the tabletop games now where the production costs have dropped considerably. You still have to pay for these costs to do that, but small teams of developers can make really cool card games and tabletop games. That's going to be a big, huge thing with AR, my opinion. Big thing with AR is going to be small dev teams could come up with amazing, cool stuff using existing plugin stuff, because you're saying, well, it's about the creature design and the gameplay. It's not about the mechanics and the software that's figured out for us.
Well, and that's the thing is that'll make it so compelling, like from a supply side of things, is that free distribution, or essentially free distribution, a fairly significant detail. If you can have a thought of what a good game would be, and you can put the effort to make up all the rules and tell the computer how to deal with every situation, and then press a button and it's instantly available to the entire planet on that platform for free, we're going to get a lot of really inventive games.
Yeah, yeah. I think that it's putting a lot of power back into the designer's hands and, you know, the innovator's hands. So I think that'll be very cool from a business or pro side. It's, you know, like I think about, there's a thousand, there's probably a dozen times a day where I do something that you figure out, would it be better or just this, whatever. Like I have to, like I get, you know, galleys of my books that I need to go proof or whatever like that. And how cool would it be if I just say, yeah, just pick up any book. And it's going to superimpose, you know, the pages and all this onto it. So, I mean, that's the thing, too. Augmented reality, you can make any book, any other book. You know,
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Sure. It seems like that's such an easy way. Like questioning those fundamental precepts. For example, you know, like we all wish that Princess Leia could float in front of us or whatever. But it's like, do we really wish that? Do we really wish that the light was there in this coherent thing? Or do we wish we had the experience? It's sort of like the Total Recall thing, the we can remember it for you wholesale,
yeah.
Where it's like, you know, do you really want the vacation or you just want the memory? And I think we just want the memory.
Well, if we can get there to the easiest path, and the idea of the reason we love the hologram, the notion of that is you're not putting anything on your head. And the thing I keep trying to sort of iterate is explain is that if you have full scale room projection mapping, if you have video projectors projecting onto every surface of your room, which is it is Moore's law shows us that the processing power and the video projection costs are dropping to the point that it will, you know, 10 years from now, whatever, it will be very cheap to cover every surface you can with multiple projectors, whatever. And you have a system that can spot your eyes and track your eyes. You can simulate 3D.
Right.
And so we can create that effect. Like, I mean, obviously certain amount of depth, you know, the kind of depth that you'd experience with just moving your head, not from, you know, binocular vision. But we can simulate that. And so you could look at it's like, you ever see those examples of like you look at an object and it looks like the Rubik's Cube sitting on the table and the camera goes to the side.
Sure.
And you realize it's 2 feet long.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what projection mapping will do. It'll work really great, you know, from one person's point of view. But if you and I are having a conversation, we're facing each other, it just projection maps behind me, you know, for you, and behind you for me. And you can create really you would call them holograms, because for the observer, they are holographic. And by doing, there's a lot of cool tricks now, foveation, eye tracking and stuff, that we can have that. We can have that future.
Yeah. Hey, are we running long? Do we have to skip Journey Quest this week?
I'm going to do a mini Journey Quest.
Uh-oh.
All right, here we go.
Get ready. Here it comes.
Previously on
Journey Quest! Yeah, it looks like we are being followed by a gigantic man-robot creature in the dust storm.
Everyone, get on the floor. It's time to party.
Do you take requests?
Press the button. You know, he's a chimp. Does he know what you want?
You know what? Can I see?
He wants a quorum. Do both of you want you to press the button?
Wait, no.
So where the heck were we?
We were chased down into the dusty Badlands by DJ Robot Extraordinaire Brycecom.
We were also in the Black Canyon, which is certainly legally different enough from the Dark Tower to avoid comparison.
That's right. And then, but there was a button that we had to press, right?
Yeah, you guys got on the train that was being run by a monkey.
Yep.
Oh my god, that's right. We got to that part.
I think you guys got him to push the button, and I think that's where we left off.
Yeah, so you're being chased. Bryce was in his big Mecha Bryce was coming at you. His big mechanical claws were coming at the back of the train, swiping at it. And then
by the way, Justin, do you think he's mad at us? Do you think he wants revenge, or maybe he wants to recruit us for another gig? Because we were pretty great.
No, he tried to kill us, Brian. He tried to kill us when we blew up.
I've got an 8-year-old, and she lashes out when what she really wants is attention. Maybe that's what this is.
He escaped certain death at the hands of Bryce. So I'm pretty positive that our abandonment of him has scarred him to the point where he will not allow us to live.
I mean, that's just because we haven't apologized formally. Just seems like we can make things right. We can.
We have literally gone since we last saw Bryce through so many different authority figures that you have immediately wanted to kill. That has always been your MO. For whatever reason, now you don't want to kill the person who's literally shooting at us.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, he's just a little misguided. He's a little confused. I feel like we can fix this. This is not unfixable.
Can we?
I don't know.
So there you are on the little tiny train, which you thought was a much bigger train. And then as you realized,
it was
the frustrating thing about, you know, depth perception in tiny trains is that it was a tiny little train. And you're asking him to press the button, and let's see what happens here. He presses. He's going for the button. Let me see if I can find this.
I would like to think you're rolling digital dice on your iPhone. You're just like,
the music starts playing.
Ah, son of a biscuit, Justin.
He turns around. The monkey is smiling at you. And, you know, he's like, feels he's waiting for you to tell him, good monkey.
You know what? I'm not going to rob him of that. I say, good monkey. Good monkey. And I pat him on the head.
What's your reaction, Justin?
At this point, I for a brief moment...
Got grazed in the back of the neck by Bryce's metallic metal fist.
For a brief moment before I gather myself, I hope that this is the song that the sweet embrace of death is letting me fall into its darkening embrace. Because there is literally no hell that can compare to what I'm going through right now between trying to shepherd Brian through all of these different trials while consistently getting punched in the nuts. I then gather myself and realize that I can't give up hope and I need to continue moving forward. But for a moment, I'm in a very dark place. Okay. As the Calliope music
recognizing
hit.
The dark cloud across his face, I stand up in the train and I turn back to Bryce and I hold out my arms outstretched wide and I make the universal sign for timeout. Timeout, and I pad my hands up and down like, whoa, let's take it easy, bud. Like, and then I do the divers, you know, two fingers at my eyes to you, like, hey, look at me, back and forth, look at me, and then I pad my hands like, come on, calm down, and then I do timeout, calm down, look at me, you and me, come on, and can
now
we talk?
You notice what a happens? Green laser tracking dot on your forehead.
I put my arms on my sides and I look at him askew and I do the a little, oh no,
chest
you don't.
Opens up tick-tock, and you tick-tock. See a missile rack push forward.
I say, Bryce.
And you hear,
I say,
you
Bryce.
See just the maniacal glee of Bryce's face as he reaches down and he presses a button.
I say, Bryce, hands are not for hurting. Let's have a conversation.
Smoke starts emitting, fire, ignition, missiles shooting straight at you.
Okay, I hide behind Justin.
We dive off the. I grab Brian as we dive off the train.
Okay, well, you dive off the train. The missile misses the train, flies off into the horizon. Monkey looks back, sees you guys got off the train, puts the train into reverse. As Bryce overshoots you guys, looks at you.
We get back on the train.
Monkey flips open another switch, presses this button. Next thing you know, rockets pop out of the side of the train. The thing starts to accelerate super fast. You're passing by Bryce. Now's your chance. You can flip him off. You can wave. You can do whatever you want.
I give him a jaunty call me gesture as I mime having a
trip
like,
to his own crater, but then he aims a wrist at you, and next thing you know, a metallic fist comes shooting right towards you. If you don't duck, you're gonna die.
Okay, well, I duck, but while I duck, I punch up my hand so we fist bump as well, as well as escaping death.
Please Brian's tell me it rips his hand off. It rips his hand off. Please tell me he has no hand.
Yeah, it breaks his wrist, snaps his hand off. Brian has no hand. Brian
damn
has
it.
No
okay,
hand.
I don't need that hand. Yeah, that's on me.
Is there flesh and bone inside, or is it more metal?
I'm holding flesh it. I'm holding bone. It to hold the blood in, and I stand up, and I say, I forgive you!
And next thing you know, you're heading towards a mountain, straight towards a mountain. The tracks end at the mountain.
Justin, do you see anything around I could use as a tourniquet? You don't happen to have earbuds from
you
your
the
iPhone,
monkey.
Do you?
You suspect the monkey may actually be a robot.
Hey, monkey, enable cure me protocol. Give me your hand. Give me your hand.
What?
Detach your hand and attach it
monkey
to my body.
Monkey looks at Justin, shrugs. Monkey
say,
goes back to driving the train straight
I say,
in the
I swear
mouth.
To God, monkey, you better give me your robot monkey hand.
Monkey
I need a
up
hand.
Up the train.
Navigation. How do we steer this thing? Where are we going? What's our destination?
Monkey just looks at you, just points straight ahead, like you're an idiot.
I say, monkey, this is the last time I'm gonna ask. Give me your monkey hand right now.
Monkey ignores you.
All right, we're screaming toward the mountain, right?
Screaming towards the mountain.
Are we gonna die, monkey?
Monkey shrugs.
You know what? I figure the monkey either has a plan. Maybe it's a holographic mountain that we're gonna go through. Maybe I don't know. The monkey doesn't seem. Monkey, are you afraid to die?
Monkey just scratched his butt, smelled his finger, and almost fell off the train.
I said, "Don't use my hand that way." Also, give me that hand.
No, monkey's eating banana with his finger with his feet.
Okay, you know what? I go up and I rub my stump on his banana to ruin it. I'm like, hey,
Monkey bares his teeth.
Yeah, he's like, what are you gonna do? Bite off my fingers? Too late, Drake.
Monkey is looking at your other hand, ready to bite off.
Okay,
the fingers.
That's a good point, Monkey. I back away slowly.
Monkeys also reminds you that monkeys will bite any exposed thing, including genitals.
Justin. I probably shouldn't have lost my hand fist bumping that giant fist that they
that
shot.
That was really dumb. Really dumb.
I thought it was going to be like a morale building moment. That's on me. Look, I think you need to drive for a bit. I don't think I'm very good at living.
Well, Brian, yeah. Since you've asked, we don't really have anywhere to drive because we are heading at a very fast rate of speed into this mountain. Really, our only decision is, do we jump off the train again? Although this time we'll almost certainly be injured, if not dead, because it's going so fast.
I got to tell you, I think
accept our fate and either this monkey's got a plan and it's headed to a secret area or we're dead.
I can't imagine that this monkey is a suicidal monkey. He doesn't seem
very suicidal.
He pulls
out a slip of paper notepad and he writes something on the pad.
I look at the pad. What does it say?
Hold on. I'm going to write it down for you. It says, it says nothing. He's like a monkey. it says, am smart, S-M-A-R-T, monkey, M-U-K-Y.
Okay. Smart monkey, can we trust you?
He said yes. He's nodding yes.
All right. Look, I'm going to say this monkey's got a plan. I lean back. I take off my belt. I wrap it around my stump. I tie it off on a tourniquet. And I start to try to experience what I'm told amputees experience as a phantom hand. And I wave my hand over it to just kind of feel like, oh, that's novel. I used to have a hand.
So you're heading straight towards the mountain, and then the monkey opens up another button.
And I look over with an eyebrow arched at Justin, and I said, see, bro, please press it, press it.
He's pressing it. He's realizes he's got to jiggle the switches a bit.
Oh no! More music. Yeah, you know what, Justin? Maybe this music is like a code. It's like a password code that's going to open up. By the way, how close to the mountain are we at this point?
You're getting pretty close.
Okay,
you're like.
Maybe this Calliope music is a secret coded reference to the name of my youngest daughter, and that maybe he's saying I'm a friend, I'm here because I remember your family who died.
You're heading straight towards the mountain. Next thing you know, it's too late to jump off. The train's too late to slow down. And next time on Journey Quest.
Ah!
God, I wanted
how did
to
I
have
lose
it,
a hand?
Noted for the record that for the second time in 10 minutes, the Calliope music brings a death wish from Justin. Justin wishes that he would just die because there is no hell that is worse than what is experiencing happening right now.
You think there's nothing worse than this?
Right now, I mean, listen, we'll see how he feels next week.
Look, I already know what's worse than this is me not having the other hand, too. Like, how did I lose a hand in the shortest episode of Journey Quest ever?
Well, I don't know. Maybe next time you'll be trying to hand jive with Mecha Hitler and you'll lose the other one.
Gentlemen, let's do some picks.
Yeah, dude. I don't think there's any dispute, no discussion, no words to describe how much I love Star Trek Bridge Crew. It is great. If you have a VR, there are fewer than 1 million people who have bought VR anythings or who can even play this game, but it is totally and completely cross-platform. Like you could do it on the Oculus.
I heard they sold like 1 million PlayStation VR units.
Oh, is that true? Somebody, I'm repeating hearsay that I read on Reddit, so that's probably wrong. But still, certainly around 1 million. Not you know the 5 or 10 million.
Yeah, it didn't catch on quite the way I think that a lot of people thought that it would right now.
Right, but I'll say this much. What a challenging! I remember back in the late '90s, Starfleet Academy was a video game coming out, and the video game design team was talking about how they wanted to replicate the experience that's in the actual television and movies, which they called the Yell'em interface, as in you just yell commands all the way around. The ability to craft a game where there's inherent informational inefficiencies, so that the captain provides an actual service by talking through what, you know, here's the situation we're at, people. Because when you play engineering on this game, You only see the engineering stuff. You have no idea how many enemies are out there. You have no way to tell how close they are. You rely on the captain to paint a picture for you that lets you know contextually whether or not you should be focused on, you know, weapons, shields, or engineering. And, of course, your job is to repair a bunch of things. It's way fun, and it's way, way good. And I am really surprised and impressed by it.
Here, just some quick text. PlayStation VR has sold 1 million units. The HTC Vive has sold 420,000, and Oculus has sold 243,000.
Yeah. So, okay. So, yeah. Close enough for a Fermi problem.
Wait, how many did the Vive sell?
Like 430.
Yeah.
430. Okay. Listen, it's great. It's easily the best PSVR game that I've played. Most of the best PSVR stuff are demos, effectively. They're tiny.
Did you buy it on PSVR?
No. I mean, I'm just saying from my experience of what I played in PSVR games. It is immersive. It's cooperative in a way that really, really benefits the medium. And it... For the first time in a while with a VR game, the feeling wasn't, oh, this is cool, or oh, this is clever. It was, oh, this is wish fulfillment, you know? And that's what I think is super fun about it was, you know, Brian and I, and we were streaming it, so we were kind of hamming it up for everybody, but like, it's amazing how fast you fall into the cadence and the vocabulary of Star Trek when you are literally sitting on the bridge and interacting with everything.
And in that moment, I got the vibe that you weren't mocking me when you called me captain. It's like in that moment, like when you play Helmsman, you know, it's like, you know, it's fun to be the person who steers and to try to do a good job and to know that you're delegating responsibilities to the captain and the captain's going to tell you what to do and you're going to assume the captain's got a reason to tell you what to do. And I don't know, like I very much enjoy... you know, the chain of command setup where it's like, I enjoyed being a subservient station person, you know?
It was super fun. And we played with two randos, which was great. And, you know, that's the reason why I was calling you captain, because like, if I called you Brian, then people might not know who I was talking to because they don't know each other. So you kind of
way to deny Brian's captainage. That's the only reason I called you captain.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, like, the game is immersive enough and demands communication to the point where you definitely fall into it. It is just an absolute blast, and I had a great time playing it, and it made me want to play it more going forward. Just a great application of the deck, and it really, I think, reinforces the idea that as much as I want two things. I want very immersive stuff that takes advantage of all the viviness of it all, that's solo. And then I want things like this that I get it. I'm going to be overpowered for a bunch of people that are sitting down at their PSVRs or their Oculuses that don't have the range of motion. But just give me co-op. Just co-op, so fun. Having a full, robust you know, people are always playing it. Situation is just such a boon to games like this.
Yeah, dude. Like knowing that you're never going to be short of being connected to other players. Like I love this idea of cross-platform pollination where it's like finally the difference between consoles and PCs have gotten small enough that, you know, that there really is no excuse to have a debate about them anymore. And let's just all play games together.
I think one way to look at this is that, you know, in 2006, if you were looking at what gaming was, you had consoles, you had PCs, and then you had some sort of desktop kind of, remember Newgrounds and all the Flash games and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
There was sort of that. But then once we got really cool mobile between iPhone and Android, is that you had mobile gaming was its own little thing. And that was a different kind of game. Then you know, a different kind of attention span, a different thing, and there was space for that, and that's become a huge part of gaming. Mobile gaming now is just in the size of it's incredibly huge, and it seems like that's what we're going to see with the VR stuff and the AR stuff. Is it's we want to put it. You know, my frustration with Oculus initially was like, is that it's like, well, you know, it was just sort of that they didn't have the positional thing. It was just initially was just the head on a stick sort of thing. It's why I got one played in the game dev. I'm like, nah, this really isn't kind of cool. This is just another, it's a peripheral for existing games. But now we're getting into this really cool next gen stuff, which I'm excited.
And also, this idea is, I don't know how many times I've said it. It's the VR game that I want, and that is Bridge Crew, but you are two pirate ships pulling up to each other, and you're manning cannons and swinging. Oh, that's what I want. I want that co-op game so bad.
So in the chat room, somebody asked, what if the Navy has this yet for running subs and other ships? One of the premier development institutions for VR stuff is the MXR lab at USC. And USC MXR lab, I did a demo there 2 years ago, 3 years ago, where one of the things they do is you can sit down at a console station. It was funded by the Navy, and it has just like a piece of plexi, like Lexan to your left, Lexan to your right. You put on the goggles, and the next thing you know, you're controlling a Navy. You're observing stuff on a naval vessel. And so it was like you could go to the top and look from the mast. You could look like a control room. So they're heavily invested in finding, you know, looking into this stuff, but, you know, need to make sure that it works before you put that in the battlefield. Kind of cool stuff.
Yeah, dude. I'll tell you what. I think you'll really get a kick out of it. I'm surprised that there's not been a non-VR component, because like you were saying, Justin, like you could get an awful lot more players just playing from behind. The important part is less the VR part, but instead it's the the voice chat and the ability to talk to everyone else, right?
I think on some kind of games, maybe. I do love the idea that we are all in VR for Bridge Crew, just because if you open up that net too wide, I think you can have, there is a vibe there, like the vibe of me and you being friends and then joining up with two randoms to run a starship where we're all looking around and seeing each other, and we can see each other's, you know, hand movements and stuff like that. And we can make jokes about like pointing at each other and everything. Like, that's so important. And I know that you're always going to get a different experience if it's on desktop.
Yeah.
You know, in the not too distant future, I can see like 50 or 60 people going to a field with AR, VR goggles, you know, in Austin, another 50 or 60 people in Oakland linking up and going to war with each other.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dude, yeah. I imagine the Braveheart experience where it's like you're going to line up, you're going to look at all your fellow warriors to your left and to your right, and you're going to know that you're going to go into battle and hopefully live to, you know, win the day, and physically run alongside them to attack and hack and slash. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. Kind of cool. My pick, and I picked this before and I finally finished the book. I really, really, really enjoyed this, and it's Tim Wu, W.U., The Attention Merchants. The Attention Merchants is about the attention economy, and it starts with the penny newspapers back in the 1800s and works its way through to Google and Facebook. And it is an extremely well-researched and insightful book. He starts off with an anecdote about a school system that partnered with an advertising company because the advertising company said, you know, you have an asset here that's, you know, struggling school system. You have an asset here you haven't appreciated, and that's the value of your students. And we would love to be able to create these, you know, help fund things at the school. And it was like starting this marketing things directly to kids and stuff, which I thought it's outrageous. And I kind of was a little bit put off, though, because of the start of the book. It's kind of like they're putting it on, you know, the advertising company. It's like, that's their job. The people hired to educate and protect these kids, They're the villains there. And you could say, well, they had budget problems and all that, largely often caused by their own inept decisions. But it's a great starting point of like, here's a scary thing where marketing companies got, you know, this public school to cooperate in directly marketing to kids and selling their attentions, which is kind of a frightening sort of version of the future. And it goes through into the modern day and age, and you find out one of the things that's fascinating to me is that you look at like the journey from, you know, Preddy, the guy who helped start Huffington Post, and then how he started BuzzFeed and the idea of just creating these super, you watched 15 years ago, all these newspapers were super critical of online and, you know, they were very proud of their Chinese walls to protect them from everything else. Those walls are gone. You know, their entire departments in the New York Times designed to make advertisements look like editorial content and look like this, and that those sort of standards are completely been erased. And like, well, it's how we compete. It's like, at what point do you say this is not what you want to do? You know, but anyhow, it's a very, very interesting research thing. But he talks about one of the things that's fascinating to me is you look at BuzzFeed, and at the time of this writing, he talks about the point that like BuzzFeed, like its most profitable point at that point, it made like $10 million in profit.
Yeah.
Compared to like the billions of page views it gets and just sort of the declining profits that are coming from creating that kind of content and doing that. So,
yeah, you know, I wondered how long, you know, nowadays, it's okay. So there's certain types of ads that you don't see on the Wall Street Journal. You don't see ads for, you know, pornography sites or whatever. Right. But what you do see is the ads for like a trashier strata of quote unquote news, you know, those Taboola things where it's just like, it's all clickbait trash articles that I assume they exist as a middle level of a funnel that eventually gets to the point where they're selling you something.
Well, yeah, I mean it's anything and everything, and it's that's the you know, in one vision, the utopian vision was, oh, imagine when advertisers can better meet what we want, what we need, and that sounds great. If they want to offer me these products and services, and great, they're providing me a service, but you're forgetting it's like, yeah, and there's everybody else who wants your attention. Everybody else who wants to sell you something is going to pay even more to reach you. And so it's not just, I'm looking for shoes. How helpful is it to help me find shoes? And talk about a guy who looked up, and I want to do some of these searches, was looking at pancreatic cancer diagnoses. And the next thing you know, he's seeing ads for funeral home planning and
yeah,
stuff.
Well, and to be honest, I had a touch of that creepiness or strangeness, I should say. It's an artifact of an emerging world. But, you know, we did the Ancestry DNA thing, and then the results came back, and I found out, much to my surprise, that I'm like one quarter Irish, which I did not know. And so then
when did you not know this?
Well, because I thought it was mainly Norwegian and English. I didn't know there was any Irish in there.
You look very Irish to me, my friend.
Well, and now
I can spot him, Brian.
As well I should. Ha ta ta ta. But it was a little bit weird when I saw an ad saying like, "Hey man, here's the list of the most common Irish surnames. Don't you want to read that?" And I was like, "Ooh, this is an advertisement that exists using my DNA data. It knows my DNA data and is giving me an ad based on that." I'm like, oh, we live in the future. It's very weird.
Yeah, and it's again, that's my like my frustration with Google and Facebook, which are amazing companies. My frustration comes from them is the fact that they are. They were the product. We are the product they sell to advertisers. And the war they have is to get more and more data, more and more stuff. And the goal they have too is that, you know, Facebook's goal is to get us to spend as much time as there as possible. They will intentionally irritate or antagonize us if they know it'll get us back in there to respond to a post. Google has to figure out how do they compel us, and they have billions of dollars of research and science and technology to manipulate us, which is fine. That's what I want. I want to live in a world where people can do that. I just want to be aware that they're doing that, you know? So.
Yeah. So it's so funny how language is inherently skewed one way or the other. There's no way to express, like the very words you use to describe the actions of a company gathering data to blah, 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 kind of creates a positive or negative vibe around it, because on the one hand you could say they're gathering your private information, and on the flip side you could also equally accurately say they are creating a repository of the truth. Like, it is a fact that your body is made from this genetic makeup of whatever. You know, whether or not that should be a secret, is that private data, which makes it feel one way, or is that a fact of the world, which, you know, can lead from everything to new vaccines to, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Well, I don't think Tubula is really trying to develop the new vaccines.
No, I agree.
And I mean, I think that if I do in public, it's in public. And I'm not, and if I decide to use these technologies, I'm agreeing to you get to grab this data. I understand that. And so it's why I don't spend time in Facebook. And I've turned off like certain Facebook like email messages, and they'll get it. They'll send it through some new Facebook service. Like, oh, so and so just updated this. I'm like, I told you not to send this to me, because damn it, they need you in there. If you're not in there, you're not generating eyeballs for revenue and stuff. And that's a thing that frustrates me. It's like that Facebook feed. Like they changed the feed where they were going to select the feed for you because they wanted to increase engagements and not do it by time based. And like, well, you can always switch it back. You can. And then 24 hours later, it switches to them selecting how the feed works.
No kidding.
It's like, yeah, because they know there's a cash difference. I get it. And it's like, I'm not going to play that game.
Wow.
You know, if only Facebook would let me know when I added a new friend that I'm now connected to them on Messenger individually.
If only it would randomly ask if I know just random names. Oh, just interrupt me in the middle of the day. Just ask me, hey, do you know Robert Gerfelblurg? No, I don't. Thank you for asking, though.
You could be connected with them on Messenger. Also, all these errant punches on your phone will all open up the fact that there's a Snapchat style camera to the left, just so you know.
Yeah. I never downloaded Messenger.
Yeah, you're probably better off.
I just was like, it's okay, I have email, I have text, Twitter. Facebook separated it from
it's actually a really good product. Like it's really, really fast and really responsive. Like I don't use WeChat or anything, but I think it's. I don't want to trivialize diseases, but just imagine an awful disease, and that's what I think of Facebook Messenger.
Well, and they put it out there. I'm like, I don't need another way to do this. This is, and when they separated it from their app, I mean, they separated it to make it standalone. I'm like, it's another ad. It's like this is it's blatant to me what it was for. I'm like, I don't need another means for people to get hold of me. I'm already falling behind all the other ones. Yep. And so I don't want to play this game.
Yep.
You know, so.
Not to mention it also, like, it is an ineffective way for people. Like, it creates a channel for people to communicate with you. And then sometimes doesn't even do that. I mean, like, there was, like, that whole go two levels into Facebook Messenger, and you will find a lot of spam. But a lot of, like, when I was doing the contender thing in Des Moines, I, like, was on New York City News, doing, like, an impression of Chris Christie at this diner or whatever. And so, like, I had casting directors trying to talk to me via Facebook Messenger.
Oh, man.
Wow.
And I never got. It was, like,
wow.
6 months.
Wow.
Wow. Thanks, Facebook Messenger.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty messed up.
Yeah.
So on that light note.
Yeah. Hello, I'm Lorne Michaels. I do a show called Saturday Night Live. I'm contacting you on Facebook.
So Attention Merchants by Tim Wu. Highly recommend this book. And understand that I don't think any of us is arguing these companies shouldn't exist. And they shouldn't. I'm not advocating we need to change the laws or whatever. It's like the dumbest thing I heard this week was Noam Chomsky, who's criticizing Neuralace and these other initiatives by Elon Musk to develop this technology. And Chomsky's like, I don't think we should trust companies to do this. These should be the government developing this.
Oh, Jesus
tech.
Christ. Save the mind control horse crap. No.
Yeah, let's leave it to the people who have the right to use guns to enforce laws and enforce. Yeah, because, I mean, what bad could happen if the Chinese government had this?
Boy.
I don't know. I mean, again, it's like Facebook Messenger. Ah, it's creepy invasive. Don't use it. Good. Problem solved. I don't want this Neuralace. Not going to use it.
I just bought
it. Hey, we are definitely running late, so we're going to have a short after things. But real quick, my pick, Wonder Woman. I really liked it.
Oh, cool. Yeah, right on.
So glad to hear it's getting great reviews. That's wonderful. Glad to hear, because we all want good DC Universe movies.
Good DC Universe movies.
Yes, awesome. Gentlemen, it's been weird.
Callie?
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.